Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and 1 a.m. Monday mornings on this fine radio station. And the programs are podcast, not only on the homepage through SoundCloud of richarddugan.com, but also on the radio show's page. And of course, as I say, SoundCloud is the main place where the podcasts are located, also on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, as well as Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, I believe is one of them. There's just so many different places that we are located now, and we're so grateful as well that we've been able to find some of those and figure out how to post the what they call the RSS feed or code. And now you can get the podcasts of the radio programs just about anywhere. 2018 is podcast. 2019, we're podcasting as we go. And programs going back to 2017 and before, the first 10 years, we're working on it. It's a slow process, but we're working on it. So please bear with us. Also, if this is your first time listening to the program, you'd like to know more about what we are and what we're doing, go to our missions page and read what we're all about. And then if you like what we're doing and you'd like to support our radio program financially, we have a PayPal account that you can go to help support the program, both the radio as well as podcast. Whatever you can support us with, we are eternally grateful for. And even if it's just energetic support. And our thanks go to those folks who have supported us in the last, I'm going to say, 9 months that we have been making that PayPal access available. So, again, whatever you can support us with, thank you, thank you, thank you. I also want to remind you that when you are listening to the radio program, they allocate 50 minutes for us. There is the possibility, very real possibility, that there's more. And that means that you're going to have to go to the podcast, the locations I've given you, and listen to the entire interview. Who knows? We may give you some kind of code or something within the context of the last 10, 15, 20 minutes, depending upon our guest availability. And you're going to want to jump on that and listen to the entire interview. And then also go to our guest's website. We're linked to them not only on the radio show's page, but when you're listening to the SoundCloud interview, you're going to see a little grocery cart up in the upper right-hand corner. That, when you click on it, will take you to our guest's website. We'll be giving you our guest's website for today's broadcast in just a couple of moments, but let's introduce our guest today, who is going to share with us a coalition that she has created that is available to you, and also a little booklet, a book that she's put out, having to do with weaving a story large enough to hold who we truly are. Be interesting to find out just exactly what knitting process we're going through. But it's called the Art of Living Coalition. My guest is Frankie Lee Slater. And Frankie Lee, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's good to have you with us.
Oh, it's wonderful to be with you, Richard, and all your circle.
And of course, coming full circle to bring the Art of Living, Your Story is Our Story by that we're going to be talking about today. And I actually have the little book, if you will, that you've made available as well. And it doesn't take long to read, folks. And it's very interesting and very informative. There are also stories within the stories for your enjoyment at the end of the book as well. The time of transformation is now, folks. Yes, indeed. And I have to say, Frankie Lee, that one of the things that I found interesting, and this was kind of brought to my attention in one of my interviews a few months back, was the difference between using the word change, talking about changing the world, and transforming the world. They said to me, you might want to change the word to transform rather than change, because if it can be changed, it can be changed back. Whereas transform, once it's transformed, usually it stays that way, or then you move on to the next level. Let's talk a little bit about that in terms of the art of living and the process of literally, you know, working on transforming the world to a better place for everybody.
Well, I would say it begins with us. Transformation for me is an inside job, and everything that I've understood is that the more that I can become aligned with my authentic self and natural self, the more I become access for others to have that possibility be alive in their lives. So, you know, it's more perhaps a world of being than of doing, as we've been led to believe. You know, it's more about being present to what's all around us and how connected we are. And from there, being able to be creative with our lives.
You know, as in reading the materials that I've found, as well as going to your website, imagine a world where all children are welcomed, celebrated, and affirmed to be their authentic selves and bring out their natural creativity. One of the things I find interesting about that is there are some societies that are not real welcoming to children if they don't fall under a certain list of criterion, you know? I remember when I was a kid growing up, Frankie Lee, I remember, I don't know about you, but I was taught in biology class that we were all different and that boys and girls were different and that they learned differently, okay? But then as I finished up my high school years in the late 70s, the whole process of giving kids Ritalin because of ADD and ADHD and all of the other acronyms as far as attention, they started giving them Ritalin. And I'm going, well, wait a minute, you just told me that everybody learns differently and now you're trying to normalize everybody? What's the deal here? And that's the thing that's really perplexed me is that, you know, when you start doing that, now you're not affirming each individual child's uniqueness and allowing them to be who and what they really are.
Yes. Well, we've been inside of thoughts as if reality over time as human beings, and it takes on different, you know, interpretations, and then those get carried forward. So basically, my observation of all of that has taken me to what the art of living can offer, which is a kind of literacy in how we perceive and how we create. So we've been inside of thoughts for a long time that say that enforcement and colonizing other people with our idea about life and what have you is the way to go. And why wouldn't we think that that was the reality if we ourselves were raised in a certain way? I feel very fortunate because I was raised by people who really encouraged me to be myself, mm-hmm. and created an environment that was conducive for that more than having a say about what I do or don't do. So that's been in our education system. It's been in our way of governing. It's been, you know, in the dominator kind of approach to going about life on Earth for millennia. And now we're waking up to a greater possibility. And to me, that comes down to the most essential understanding of the natural world, our relationship with it, and how, as I said, perception and how we create actually works, which we can understand and we can bring consciousness to, and we can create from there.
Mm. Well, when we take a look at our world around us, it appears that what we've created is not beneficial for all people. And, you know, I keep hearing from I call it the sidelines, because I'd like to think that we're in the forefront and this is not about excluding anyone. This is trying to include everyone, you know, without exception. I talk about a lifeboat, and it'll hold 7.6 billion people. There's only one catch. You have to be willing to let go of the old ways of doing things because they're not working. Look around. But unfortunately, there are still people who want to use these old ways of doing things. I still remember, and I think maybe we talked a little about this, in 2008-09 when we went through this little financial thing we went through, whatever it was, I don't know what to call it. But I kept hearing the phrase, we've never been here before. This is brand new territory. And yet they kept using the same solutions that they'd used over the decades for this situation we'd never faced before, instead of trying to come up with something new. And I mean, to me, that's a prime example of a lack of creativity, of resting on our laurels, so to speak.
I would agree, Richard. The thing is that having the concept of that is quite different from having the practical understanding that allows you to really take an action. Mm-hmm. And because of the way we've been educated, which is pretty fact-based and getting it right, the actual practical understanding isn't necessarily there, even for people who are, you know, very dedicated, you know, have a real spirit to wanting to make a difference and may be highly educated. So what I've come to in being out with people to the degree that I have, which I shared with you, I've been on the road now for 8 full years, living in hundreds of homes, actually moving in with people, but really 3 times that in my life, is when you really get out and you get up close with people, there's a universal connection that we have. There's a natural creativity. And then there's many, many different life experiences that we've had that in some way induce a certain perspective on life that makes us think that that's the way. And unless we have this more subtle understanding of perception, we can't really get at it. We may think we're getting at it, but it often is left at the level of concept with good intentions. Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely. I just dealing one more time with the economic issue, and it's, you know, I'm not getting real specific here. It's more of a general thing in terms of my own thought process. Even as a child, learning about capitalism and free enterprise, learning about the fact that in 5, 6, or 8 years from then, I would either be going to college or maybe I'd be going to work. And they would describe the processes that we would go through in economics class or whatever whatever section of the class we were doing regarding economics. And talking about going and getting your first job, and you're going to get paid maybe minimum wage, maybe a little bit more, you know, and so forth, depending upon your training. And maybe you'll stay there. And back then, the model was that you would stay at a company for 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 years, you know, if you really liked what you did, just like your dad and his dad and his dad before him. And so you would hope that over the course of time, you know, you'd get a little bump up in salary or hourly rate. And of course, again, my thought process began to process this information. I'm going, okay, I like that part of it, but the rest of it doesn't make any sense. It's not sustainable, because if I go and all my other coworkers go every year and say, I'd like a little more money, a little more money, what does the employer have to do? Well, he either has to cut back or he has to increase the price of his product or service. All right, so then the next year rolls around and we go back to the employer. Hey, like a little more money. And if he, you know, if he's choosing to do that, well, guess what he has to do? Either cut back or increase the cost of his product or service. And each year goes by and this same process continues if you stay there. Then the price of the product or service goes up. Your economic power, if you will, your buying power decreases. So you've got to get more to increase your buying power. And this cycle spins out of control until you can't afford anything. And I thought, this model doesn't make any sense. And I've talked to economists about numbers, for example, you know, and you know how when the numbers come out like every month or so, if they're not good, you know, everybody's depressed and sad and the stock market falls or this or that or the other. And even when the numbers are good, nobody's happy. So my question to the economist is, well, what numbers would make you happy? You know, what would make you happy to tell us things are good? So it just seems like everybody has been they claim that this is the best economic model in the world. And I'm going, but what have we tried them all? Have we created them all, and this is the last one in the list? Whether it's economy, whether it's religion or education or politics or any of the other institutions that exist in the world today, What's your thought on trying to come up with those new and creative ways in these different institutions to help foster not only a more sustainable system and institution, but also how it then benefits and supports the people who use it and even work in it?
Well, that's a good question.
I know it's a big one, too.
Well, it's actually, I have a very specific answer. And I really want to, I thought about this before our conversation today, what I wanted for people to be able to get the value of my deep dive and the purpose of being on this program with you. And it's that I really want people to have access to a much more subtle level than the surface managing of circumstances, which is by and large how we're going about things. I couldn't possibly answer that question on the surface without just being in opinions. And that's largely where we're operating from. Certain people have their position, other people have their position. Now they're arguing for their positions, or they're compromising, or they're in some sort of mediation process. I stay away from that entirely because I've found it to be like Don Quixote, like, you know, batting away at the windmills. Yeah. It's actually not useful. So I'm going to take you to a practical place, if
okay.
I may.
Please.
Which has to do with this more subtle level. So we are creating all the time. It's impossible for us to not be creative. Now, whether we're doing so consciously or not is another thing. The reason that I emphasized so much what it would be like to come into this world and be welcomed is because we come in whole and complete. And if we are welcomed, if we are affirmed, then we can unfold like anything natural in the world. Our nature as human beings is magnificent. It is full of this gift of creativity. So what I would do and what I am dedicated to in my life is affirming people's natural greatness so that it can be touched into and brought out. And from that place, people will be able to make their own good and true choices. But it has to do with a foundational understanding of the natural world and our part in it. So one of the things I observed in moving into households with so many people is that oftentimes people have a sense of how they're impacted, but they don't really have a full sense of how they impact, whether positively or negatively. So they may just see their worldview. So having the distinction of, oh, I think my worldview is the worldview, in contrast to actually there's a couple of different worldviews that are here present. You, Richard, I, Frankie Lee, we're now here together. Something's brought us together. Now it becomes a discovery process of getting each other's worlds, kind of a cultural diplomacy 101, if you will. And we can learn from each other. We can benefit from the perspectives. This is the place where the solutions reside. Anything else is intellect. Mm. Direct perception is something that's only available when we're totally present to the moment and in a feeling place of connection.
Well, I could not agree with you on that any more in that respect, but you've actually found in the last few years, again, in your, as you describe it, your deep dive, a different way of living, literally a new way. And it really is, because I don't know of any other time in our history when people would actually do what you have done, and that is travel around, in your case, to six different states and hundreds of different homes and living with different people in different circumstances and having not only a level of bravery on your part, as well as the people who allow you to come into their home, You know, I mean, if you think about it, doesn't that require a certain level of bravery on both your part as well as the part of the people who
absolutely
allow you to come in?
It's stretching the courage, which is an ancient art.
Courage, yeah.
You know.
Uh-huh.
Or and also you know, willingness to go for it. I've actually been taking account recently of the astounding people who have stepped up and seen to participate in this wild experiment of Circles Uniting the Gypsy Road Tour, and who they are. Like there's a couple in Santa Barbara, Nancy Black and Isaac Hernandez, who just came out with a long dedicated documentary, Better Together, about how people come together in Santa Barbara. They were hosts of mine the first year of my travels, 2011. I just spoke in the last couple of weeks with a fellow in England who hosted me on a previous tour in 2004, and he's come out with his second album specific to the cetacea, the whales and dolphins, and what they have to teach us and our relationship going back to an Aboriginal group in Australia that have been kindred with the cetacea world forever and a day. It just goes on and on how amazing these people are. So you started out this conversation by, you know, reflecting on how I call this a weave, and it is, you know, mm-hmm. our life is a fabric. It's relational. We are in relationship with the natural world, with the cosmos, with one another, and with ourselves, you know, at all times. But our orientation in the sort of psychological model has been as if we're in isolation. It's all going on with us. And this is, I think, the call of the moment, is that we're really being called up to this greater awareness of who we are with one another and the possibility that it opens up as well. So my travels have included, you know, weaving all this together. I've documented everything, which is something I'm really excited about sharing and getting the backing and what have you to take out possibly as a museum show. We have Artist of Life TV on YouTube that we're starting to put some of the modules of all the video from the years in Los Angeles with the women's international women's gatherings and then the most recent years. And beautiful stills, audio conversations, sound samples. It's all been documented for this moment, for sharing process. Because no matter how well-intended someone is, no matter how inspired they might be, to actually be able to take the action and to be able to live these principles as our lives requires understanding the process involved, the how.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what all of my work can give people access to. And I'm excited to bring, because why do something so extreme as go put my life on the road for 8 years, but to bring it? I brought it to all the people that I was with. I you know, I believe if you spoke to the good majority of them, you'd get, you know, very good report of the breakthroughs and the awarenesses and the sparks that came out of it. Certainly I learned so much from everybody. And then the other component is being able to bring it to people all around the world so they have access to create the lives and the world they really want to together.
I mean, this raises good grief. I mean, as you're talking, these questions just are blowing through my mind of this process. I've shared on this program of my dream of this radio program going on the road, sort of the old Charles Kuralt on the road kind of thing. And I remember when my wife and I, a couple of years ago, during the week between Christmas and New Year's, we took our first vacation in 10 years at that time. And we drove up to Yosemite and then Nevada City. And the people that we met and the experiences that we had, there were two rules on that trip. One was that we weren't going to rush. We were going to take our time, even though obviously we had to get to our first destination before like 7 or 8 o'clock, before maybe the office closed or something of that nature. The second rule was that we would not eat at any fast food restaurants. That would always be like the diners, you know, the small town kinds of places where, you know, the food that was prepared was, you know, really good stuff. and the people that we met along the way. And I think about that in terms of our trip to Ireland. We were there for 2 weeks. We went twice for 2 week trips, and the same kind of thing, and the experiences. And I can only imagine what the outcome of whether it be a museum piece or some kind of a podcast or some type of maybe a Netflix special featuring Frankie Lee Slater, showing that not only is this possible, not only is it possible, but how essential it is. And it doesn't mean that everybody, the 350 million people in the United States, have to jump in their cars and start traveling around. What we're talking about is making those connections. That's really, to me, what you're, as far as these first set of questions that come to mind, what you're really talking about are the art of living. And again, weaving this story. You can't weave a story unless you weave into it other people who, guess what, live on the planet with you.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful opportunity. Imagine that, you know, if one person, you know, in this case myself, can have this magnificent of a relational life, what becomes possible for 7.6 billion people when we affirm the rightness of our being here together. It's the greatest genius that perhaps has ever been anywhere in the cosmos. And it's happening right here on planet Earth. First of all, let me say, Richard, that if you want to switch positions with me and you go on the road and I land, I'm all for it, because I'm happy to embrace and model these principles, you know, while being a landed person as mm-hmm. well. And actually, I like the combination, so I'm being a little bit lighthearted, but I sure. did want to make a point of saying on this program, because actually that's how you and I met. Our wonderful fellow who puts on a film series in Santa Barbara and also up on the San Luis Obispo area where I've been living recently, Bob Banner got the word out to his community, and you were one of those people and responded and indicated your interest in having me on the program.
Yes.
And the impetus at getting that outreach was that I am truly continuing this weaving process to bring me in for a landing, and believe very strongly that there is a hosted situation for me in the greater Santa Barbara, Central Coast to Los Angeles area, where we can be in production on the global version of Circles Uniting, which all of this has been growing towards a global cultural exchange that informs people of the principles that they can then apply in whatever their local is, local being their small town, local being the region, local being the entire globe in my case, you know. So yeah. It's whatever it is for people, but it really is a skill for people to understand. And in terms of the road and being landed, I learned many years ago from one of the pioneers in the eco psychology movement who was taking people out on wilderness experiences. He actually retired because he felt that people weren't really getting that it was all one fabric. They were experiencing, well, they go to this, you know, wilderness experience on the weekend or for a week or something, or today maybe they go to a festival or something, but then they have to return to their lives, and their life is saddled with all these responsibilities yeah. and fixedness and all, you know. So I learned then that it was really important for me to model something that was 24/7, that it didn't have demarcations, and that illustrated it. And I would say it was sort of the okay leap aspect for me in April of 2011 that had me go on the road, was that I was noticing so much talking about how it could be. And one thing that's really, really important for people to be able to discern is the difference between we see it, it's possible, we're now talking about it, we have cocktail conversations, we go on panels about it and everything else, and the actual stepping in, and stepping in as your life. And so it just became so large in my perception that I could do that. I could be that person. And I have really deep relationship currency anyway. I produced maybe 100 different gatherings across Los Angeles from the late 80s. So I know a lot of people intimately because I've created with them. And so I went on the road because I felt I could be access for something. And I am. And not I, but we. And that's the whole thing of our story being woven, is that it's always there. You could take account of your life, anyone listening to this program. But do we? Or do we end up inside of these thoughts that have been propagated, that we're on our own, that we have to do it ourselves, that the thing to do is to effort and push through? No, indeed it's not. Those are the high signs to say stop and consider the depth of relationship that already exists in our lives. And maybe it needs to be brought into present time. Sure it does. That's something I'm going through right now. I'm calling up people from all different circles of times of my life and saying, you know, I know that we live inside of each other. We have since the day we met and probably long before that, you know, it, and that's the truth of it. And if you don't think so, then let's have a conversation, please, whoever that, you know, can actually shake that up some and bring the truth of our connection into this present moment, because it's buoyant. It's amazing. We live in the garden. What's possible for us is so far beyond managing circumstances, figuring things out, and certainly beyond taking positions of us and them.
Well, you bring a couple things to mind, and we're talking with Frankie Lee Slater and the art of living, weaving a story large enough to hold who we truly are. Two things. Number one, you mentioned the intimacy you created with people, what flashed in my mind was when I was 21 years of age, I was working for a radio station, Radio Reading Service, and I was producing for the very first time, had never done it before, a radio theater with a very dear friend of mine who I haven't seen in probably maybe 20 or 30 years. His name was Sam Barcelona. He was the director. And I flashed on the images of us sitting in the control room trying to figure out how to piece together this radio theater that neither of us had ever done before. But what an extraordinary experience it was and how much fun we had together creating it from nothing, having, again, not having any points of reference. And I was like, wow. And when you mentioned that aspect of creating with others, there is a real sense of intimacy in that.
Yes, and I love the spark. You can feel it too, right?
You know,
like everything you just described is just full of life force. In Los Angeles, when I was a women's gathering producer and hostess and what have you, which began in the early 90s, we had a very simple gathering kind of style, which was just a sit around a fire, pass a talking stick, share a meal. What that did to create a space for people to really just be, to sink in, to be able to speak from our hearts, to listen. And then we grew from there into inviting various of the women that I would meet to present their work, which was largely ritual and story oriented. And we would get the benefits of being turned on to the different gifts that each one brought. And that grew into these international women's gatherings that I started in 1999. And those were true weaves. In fact, the first gathering in 1999, I called We Are the Weavers, We Are the Weave, because it was a recognition that we weave, but we're part of the weave as well. It's the feminine and the masculine are in balance. And I got to create the forum for people to bring their gifts together, which I would say is my forte, to see that people have gifts, to bring it out, and to create avenues for them to bring it together. And so there would be a poet with another gal who put together the house band, totally of her own volition, with a veil dancer who had never met before. And they created one aspect of the several hour program. And we wove that with the next, Very, very different than you're on at two, you're on at three, and we're supposedly together. There's a depth that we can take it to. And it is magnificent to discover our own gifts. It's magnificent to understand that we can rely on one another and what the value is that we get from that. And that's what I get in the household. I mean, I've learned so much from the people that I've been able to create and live with this intimately. And that's the possibility of this time. And not just the people, the animals, the deer in the field in Colorado, the little kittens in the household where I'm living right now, the ocean, the mountains. That's the world we live in. So to think that we could ever think ourselves not creative, if we could ever like become like just fixated on what isn't working and making wrong, when we are living in the garden with that much magnificence, that's the tragedy of our time. And that's why access to how we create, being artists of life, the art of living, coming together, is so crucial, foundational, and actually pretty simple.
Yeah. One of the other thoughts that came to me too, I wish I could remember which political campaign this was happening under, but I remember there was a story that came out of Texas, and it was a bunch of these entrepreneurs, these small business owners. And I don't know exactly how it started, but what I remember from the story was they were all standing around chanting, and then, of course, each individual person was interviewed, talking about how, I did this myself. This is my business, and I did this. I. And I'm sitting here going, if you did it all yourself, then you're your only employee, and you're also your only customer. You didn't do it all yourself. You did it with the banker, and you did it with the designer who set up your shop, and you did it with this person, and you did it with the customers who come in and buy your product or service. Nobody does it alone.
Yeah, but I started out a workshop one time. I kind of feel like I might like to continue this, where I before I said anything else, you know, they say you're supposed to develop rapport and everything else. Maybe I had a natural rapport, who knows? But the first thing I said is, please, everybody stand up. Now jump. And they did. They stood up, they jumped. And then, of course, they all landed back down. And I said, well, as far as I can see, we're all here together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are. We're here together. It's an impossibility to be all on our own. But this is the thing about understanding thought itself, understanding how it's propagated. We have a lot of stuff coming to the surface today. There's these so-called power mongers, authorities, and they're doing some dastardly stuff to us and everything. Well, okay, maybe they are. Maybe we could even make a long list of how horrible it is. Or we could actually understand how it works. And if we understand how it works, perception and how we create, then we can create gloriously and not be at of the effect, not be reactionary, and not be, you know, self-limiting in ways that we don't have access to until we understand this. It's crucial. And I can't say enough that, so in all my living with these hundreds of households of people, which is a big variety of people and cultures, I want to say, it's not like every 200 suburban households or something, you know, it's a range, intentional communities, boats and three marinas, the home of the 57th Street Gang Art Park in downtown Los Angeles. I've lived, you know, where, as I mentioned, there's deer running free, you know, right up to the property in Colorado and close to nature and the gardening. And it's really a range, millennials to retired high school counselor in Oregon on the coast. But the thing that we're all up against, the thing that we have the possibility to break through, is the self-limiting over-reliance on thought without being deeply seeped in our feeling nature and sourced. I would say that the greatest teaching of my being on the road is to live a life of guidance in connection with, whether you want to call it the divine, you want to call it nature, you want to call it great creator, you know, whatever it is for you, there is something much larger than any of us that we are always in relationship with. And when we're present, we have the possibility of being sourced in this relationship. And I have been guided to all of these different people, people who came forth and invited me into their home because I ended up at a women's writers group, you know, or I sat in my car and it was time to go to the bookstore. I was that available to this relationship of guidance, to the cyclical nature of cosmic time. There was a time on the planet where the art of living was integral to the great civilizations. It was what was taught in the mystery schools of the Toltecs, the Tamalcitas. Where did it go? And my work on the planet, my assignment, which I just take great pleasure and responsibility in, is to revitalize the art of living for our time so that we can create the lives that we're here for, then the soul journey that we're here to realize, the bigger selves that live within us that we all know is there, but you know, we feel uncomfortable with, and so we present this sort of false social selves. Well, that all comes down in the home. And the challenging part, the courageous part that you were speaking about, that people have walked through with me, I so appreciate, because we really can get beyond these containments and be fulfilled in who we came here to be.
Frankie Lee Slater is my guest. We're talking about the art of living. Theartofliving.com and FrankieLeeSlater.com are the websites. I'm Richard Dugan. I want you to stay right where you are. We got a lot more coming your way. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Frankie Lee Slater and the art of living. Art of living. Theartofliving.com is the website.
Frankie. No. But Richard, there's no the in front of it.
Okay, Art of Living. It's just Art of Living. I see it right there. Artofliving.com. And
thank
we
you.
Encourage you to go there. We will be linked to your website at artofliving.com as well. And we encourage people to go there, weaving a story of large enough to hold who we truly are. One of the things that you remind me of, not so much as an individual, but your adventures. Traveling about and staying in over 200 or plus residences and so forth across six different states. It reminds me of a story from the book Autobiography of a Yogi, where Paramahansa and his friend Jitendra were challenged by Paramahansa's brother that if you're really trusting in God, then here's your test. You can't take any money with you. And you can take the shoes on your feet and the clothes on your back, and you go to this one city, and you return in 24, 48 hours. I can't remember the exact details. And you return unscathed, and I will become one of your disciples. And what was so fascinating was that the experiences related in that particular chapter where Paramahansa trusted the Lord, trusted the universe, if you will, to provide. And every so often someone would come into their realm, if you will, into their little circle there and say, oh, hey, are you so-and-so and this and that and the other? You're going here and there. Hey, well, we'd like to take you there. But before we go there, we're going to go here to this house and we're going to get something to eat. And so there was the meal. Unfortunately, Jitendra was the doubting Thomas. Even after his belly was full, now he's now worried about the next meal. Already, his belly is full and he's worried about the next meal. He's worried about whatever it is that he's worried about. Did any of those kinds of thoughts run through your mind as your adventure unfolded, where you maybe got a little concerned about where my next meal, where am I going to lay my head tomorrow night, and where that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Of course, all of that comes to the surface. It comes to the surface whether you're out on a crazy ride like this, or you're just living your life with all the pressures that we have in today's world, you know, am I capable? Am I spot on here? You know, it may be, I've certainly had a lot of things projected on me too, you know, and I live in a world where there's a prevailing thought. So all of that is there. I would say the opportunity when one becomes more practiced, as I am, is that it's a kind of shedding of all of that, a clearing the way. And it creates a tremendous sense of freedom and being at home wherever one is through the process. So absolutely it comes up. You know, I think anybody who's ever practiced meditation or taught it, you know, says the thoughts are going to, you know, come up. Of course they are. It's a matter of whether you glam onto them or not, you know. The challenges, let's see what I could do to answer what you're asking here, which is depending on people's experience of the world and how big or small they've lived into the world, they may have very, strong kind of determinations about their worldview being the world and the worldview, you know. So it can bring up a lot when I'm around, because the possibility of opening things up, like you were saying, people being courageous, is absolutely there. But it's also confronting to the part of us that believed that security can be found in hunkering down. We're seeing this on, you know, with nationalism and trying, you know, people kind of putting their heels back down, you know, thinking that that's going to somehow make them safe and secure. What I know through this process of letting the veils down and you know, letting go of these kind of like prevailing thoughts is that's where the security and the freedom really come in. You know, but people have projected all sorts of things on me. You know, I'm a tall woman. I'm pretty bold, as you can pick up, you know, and I was born on Mother's Day. So I have this sort of big mother vibe, you know, and I can be scripted as someone's authority figure, you know, which can be very beneficial when they're in an open place to embrace and get the nurture and the teachings and the kind of interface with this world. But it also can be acted out on, you know, like, oh, who the hell do you think you are? And all of that. This, again, is thought, you know. So mm-hmm. I have been able to sort of frame it in the benefits of what I've been shown and how I can design it into the Art of Living Television, Circles Uniting as these global cultural events, and all. On an interpersonal level, it has been very challenging. And I feel like the greatest thing I can do right now is be really vulnerable in that, yes, I have taken on a lot over the course of my travels. I've also been shown a depth of field, and I really would love the assistance of a community of people to model how, by assisting me in taking this step to bring what I've been shown, can aid people all around the world, and we become that shift. It is a living model. So, you know, I don't see things in goods and bads and rights and wrongs. I see them in a kind of perfection of an unfolding so that we can be shown what we need to be able to see into to make these transformations that you were speaking about.
Well, and to that end, in an interview that I did last week, we were actually talking about that very aspect of living, you know, in the good, the bad, the right, the wrong, the black, the white, the dark, the light. And one of the things that I use as an analogy has to do with the cosmos, macro view, if you will, and has to do with the fact that the universe is constantly in motion and stuff's happening out there. And when we're looking through a telescope, let's just say we're looking through a telescope and, you know, we are watching, say, a star go supernova, or we're watching.
That sounds great.
Yeah, well, sure, yeah. And, of course, from this distance, that would be a wonderful thing, right? That would be beautiful. It would be fantastic, right? All right? Nothing wrong with that. All right. But when we – and so we just say, hey, that's just the process of the universe, right? All right?
Yes.
There's no judgment. There's no duality there. It just is, right? But when we start focusing our attentions on more of the present day level here on this planet, in our lives, the mid-cro, as opposed to the macro, the micro, the mid-cro, we start passing judgment and putting a judgment on it, whether it's good or bad. And it's like, well, wait a minute. It kind of goes to what you just said, that if it's true in the universe, and we are in the universe, then why wouldn't it be true for us? That it is not dual. It is singular. It just is. It's a flow. It's, you know, it's an ebb and a flow, just like the tides rolling in and out here on the beaches of Santa Barbara, the waves rolling in and out, and the tides going in and then coming out and so forth and so on. It just is the... It's just the way that it is. No judgment whatsoever. Who judges the tides? The tides, the high tides, those are bad. Low tides, oh, those are good. Well, maybe, but to the birds and the other critters who, that feed off of whatever fish are in there, I would think they'd want high tide so they don't have to walk out as far, you know?
Well, this again is where the principles and dynamics come in. You know, we can understand how to be, you know, surf the tide. We can understand the ways of the natural world, the wave to the particle. And I want to make sure while we, you know, we still have some time to put out an invitation, if I may.
Got plenty of time. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, that I've been shown all these, you know, very intricate, subtle level. It's like a literacy, and it can be taught. It can be understood. And it very much informs people's lives. I've seen the transformation in so many households. I offer it up as something that people can have the benefit of for community building, for transforming the culture of their businesses, for setting themselves up in a really powerful and good way in their education, whether it's elementary school or all the way through life and college. And that I've designed some very large-scale media and events to be orchestrated. And I'm inviting people to collaborate with me and to host me so that we can be in production for these larger events, really to make these principles accessible on all different levels, through publishing, through things like the YouTube channel. So we do have artofliving.com. We also have a Circles Uniting Global Facebook page that I invite people to join, where we'll be organizing things. Now, it would be a very crazy thing if it was a matter of Frankie Lee Slater, this is her thing, you know, jump on my bandwagon. For me, it's very different than that. And we could even say it's the bringing the feminine principles of being into balance, which is that all of this is already taking place. And what I've been shown is ways to coalesce it, to convene, to provide context, to show the relationship, to create that awareness with enough steady state. And to invite all the people that hosted me, all the people that participated in all these gatherings through the years, all the new people who will be listening here, to come together at this next level. That it is a skill, and it does require a higher awareness, but my goodness, it's fun. And the spirit that you were sharing with your younger self and being in co-creativity, that can be the way of our lives.
Yeah, I have to say that that I have been very blessed to have had that experience again on multiple occasions, because, and of course, I guess I'm kind of the same as you, and I'm very gregarious most probably 90% of
yes.
the time, and I want to bring people in. I never fostered the attitude that is in a lot of people in workplace today. I never fostered that territorial attitude. Maybe with one very small exception, when I was running a radio station all by myself, and then the company that owned the station I was running bought another one, brought them into the suite where I was working, brought all their equipment and everything. And then slowly, week by week, they took away one task after another. But my philosophy has always been, I want to share everything that I know with everybody around me who doesn't know it, because if they learn it and then they can come in and do what I'm doing, what does that allow me to do? It allows me to go off and do new things.
Yes. Well, that's a great awareness, Richard. Be sure to keep sharing that one, because I feel like, because we've been inside of hierarchy as much as we have, some of the people that have been most visible for people to maybe reach out to and ask to be mentored or fostered have become self-protective and siloed because they don't really necessarily have the skill that you just spoke to. And so everybody's coming at them, whereas we really could be being forwarding. But there's a refinement, basically. There's sure. a refinement that when we understand these principles, we can put into the structures so that the structures aren't all bad. They're actually good structures, ones that are kindred to natural living systems that can work for us. You know, it does require a different orientation, a kind of sociological orientation to who we are with one another. And I actually went online in the last week or so, and I found these two gals had written an introduction to sociology book that was up online, and one of them was a professor at UC Santa Barbara. So I'm really scanning for who are my Anamkara people in the Santa Barbara area that I can bring some of this work with that are naturally, you know, inclined. There seem to be, you know, so many there to flesh out.
Well, I pause here because you have used a phrase that I was interviewing a gentleman out of Ireland who uses that phrase, Anamkara, Tony Cookson. We talked a lot about that. That's wonderful. And of course, I have this incredible affinity for Ireland. You know, I realize this may not set well with some. I would gladly trade my U.S. citizenship for Irish citizenship to be able to move there, live there for the rest of my days, because I love that.
Yeah, I could see you there.
I love the country there. But
and for the people who don't yet know the term Anamkara.
Oh, please, yes.
Soul friend.
Yeah.
So it's this heart connection. People that are people, you know. Now, of course, I feel that about all people. And then we know we can, you know, be really intimate and up close with people that we just particularly resonate with. And that is sort of the spirit of Anamkara.
Indeed. The art of living is what we're talking about. And of course, it's about weaving a story large enough to hold who we truly are. And I'm going to remind you of the websites. They are artofliving.com, as well as FrankieLeeSlater.com. And you can also get in contact with her. Her email address is livingart@artofliving.com. livingart@artofliving.com. I want to ask you about that last part of the subtitle of this book that you have, The Art of Living. Who are we, really?
Creator beings with creation. To be human is to be creative. It's an amazing gift, is what I've come to. Now, do I know for other people that that's absolutely so? I can only know for myself, and I can know through my experience of taking that possibility out with a whole lot of people that it's a very lovely way to go about life. So, more from the standpoint of it being a very lovely way to go about life, I would say that's my answer. When I first set out and kind of went beyond the castle walls that you were seeing with Yogananda, or we know the Buddha, you know, anyone that's gone kind of on the hero's journey, heroine's journey, you know, you go beyond the world as you know it, to be out there and to discover, to meet the challenges, and to find the treasure and then be able to bring it. And then to meet that world again on one's return is always maybe the biggest and the most hidden challenge, because how do you bring it to the world that's on the crest of being transformed and moving into the next? But the thing that I found along the way, the treasure that grew in me and my understanding, was this notion of being artists of life, that our whole life is our art, that it isn't the providence of only certain people to be creative and others not, or we used to be, but we're not anymore. All of that is a fallacy. We are essentially creator beings with creation, however you define that. And we have the possibility of being magnificently creative in every moment of our lives when we're awakened.
Now, one of the other aspects I wanted to ask you about, and you touched upon it at the beginning of the program, having to do with the natural world. And I have often felt that the natural world is, and this is just from my perspective, I could be wrong, the natural world is the ultimate teacher of the lessons, but also of the ways in which we could be living, not should be, but could be living. And I use this one prime example, and then I'll have you explain or expound on it.
Okay.
What species other than man stores up for more than one season? There isn't one other than man. We've got silos full of grains and this kind of thing, and warehouses across this land filled with stuff and food, you know, that have been there maybe for years. And they've, of course, been hit with preservatives, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, there's no other species. I mean, you talk about, for example, I love the example of the squirrel. He's out there spring, summer, and fall. He's gathering up nuts and shoving them into the tree where he's living because he knows it's going to be a cold winter, and he's going to need that for getting through the wintertime. Between sleeping, he's going to eat. But he just does it for a season. I don't know of any other species that I'm going to say hordes the way man does.
Yeah, I haven't actually contemplated that specific thing. I can hear what you're saying in there, though. You know, it's being natural to me is, like, for instance, I have this amazingly intimate relationship with a little cat that came to the household where I'm living in Los Osos about the same time I did in July this summer, and Nora. And I don't, you know, it's inexplicable how intimate and connected we are. We gaze in each other's eyes. I've had cats before. This is extraordinary. And, you know, I think about cat nature, like a cat. You know, a cat never leaps out of bed with an alarm clock. You know, a cat always stretches, always gets into its body before it starts to move.
Oh, yeah.
This is what's natural. Now, we have the capacity as human beings, and it's a, you know, it's a gift, but the downside is that we can override our nature. But if we become too practiced at it, we can become habitual about it. So, you know, leaping out of bed to an alarm clock, not stretching, not, you know, being in artificial time itself. So these habits of behavior have been so deeply ingrained in the way we've been educated in the industrial society, you know, that we don't recognize them as artificial any longer. We consider them to be the way in reality. So the notion of connecting with the natural world is to rekindle our feeling nature and relational, you know, experience of the natural world. Now, I am now on the Central Coast on the bay with a forest and hikes up mountains in the ocean. I've been a devotee of the ocean for over a decade. I have a series of fine art photography called Oceania, Message from the Great Mother of Ocean and the Oregon coast, my God. You know,
I've been to your website and I've seen those photographs. Amazing. Just amazing. Beautiful stuff.
Thank you so much. But, you know, the thing that's most important about it to me is that by my being able to be present and sourced and in this direct perception and relationship, I am awe, living in awe. I have now this extraordinary collection of photographs that can open up this feeling world for people everywhere. Now, that's how being affirmed in our nature works. That happens to be a natural gift of mine. What's yours? What's yours and yours and yours? Ask yourself, what has always come naturally to you as a little child all through your life? Where did you contribute? What gave you energy? What it was like the Energizer Bunny and just flow, you know, went, go and go and go. That's who each of us is here to be. I have had a lot of freedom in my life to live true to my nature. Even when I was working in corporations, I was in public relations, which meant that my job and purpose had to do with like over lunches and events in the evening and the weekends. And I came and I went. So I was able to maintain my natural rhythm and flow, even when a lot of the people were 9-to-5-ing, having to be inside of artificial constructs. So there's a place to go. And I love that I have these gifts to bring, but more than anything, because I can be a permissionary. John Lilly, who was one of my mentors, I lived at his house years ago, who did the interspecies communications with dolphins and whales and all. Anyway, he came up with that term, being a permissionary, and I've adopted it. If I can be a permissionary through the way I live my life so that people have more access to their natural selves and more ability to expand beyond what they have, like, kind of, you know, contained themselves into, and recognize that it's only they who are keeping themselves contained, and rely on one another, then I, you know, that's my fulfillment. That's my joy.
I'm looking at Piers and Shore, the photograph. It makes me think of I imagine that if I didn't know that it was a pier, I would think, well, somebody's trying to build a bridge to the sun, so to speak, to the light, to the light. I love it. And then,
I'll
of course,
keep
you have
you around, Richard.
I love the seagull in the foreground as well. Before we wrap our program up here, I want to touch upon, again, that word that I was asked to use instead of the word change, transform. Talked about it a little bit. But I want to talk about it from this perspective. Have you to expound on this. And that is that you and I and many other folks who are listening are working consciously to transform our lives to, again, maybe to be the person that we were meant to be, if you will. Or to, as you say in the wonderful little subtitle, to learn who we truly are and live that and share that with others. But there are also a lot of people who they view what we're talking about for the last over an hour as, oh, that's fantasy. You guys live in a pipe dream, you know, Pollyanna. What are you guys, crazy? What are you smoking? What are you taking, you know? And they have no interest. They're more interested in acquiring as much money, as much stuff, as big a house, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Build, 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 create, create, create from their perspective. And not really having a lot of concern for humanity at large, you know, other than being able to sap from humanity all that they can. And I'm wondering, is there anything we can do for them, or is there something that we should be doing for ourselves to sort of, I'm not sure if the word is protect ourselves from that kind of energy, because these people are around us, so we can't really, you know, I mean, again, looking at Piers and Shore, we can't just walk out into the ocean and say, bye-bye, I'm not going to have anything to do with you. I'm going to be out here now.
Well, you know, I tend to be kind of a proponent that people are people are people are people. You know, it's how these behaviors show up, you know, maybe seem more, you know, like fixed in some than others. You know, we have different versions, but it is very difficult to bring something to someone who's resistant, you know, and if you bring something where you seem to be exalting, you know, if you, I, we seem to be exalting ourselves as in the know, like the other person doesn't, it, you know, it certainly makes sense that we would push buttons of, you know, resisting or putting up walls and all. So it takes a lot. And this is where the more subtle level comes in. I'm now very, very practiced in what I would call diplomacy 101. I understand how to be completely neutral about the result and offer something up that the person has complete choice about accepting or not now or whenever. And it makes a huge difference energetically where we're coming from when we make an offering. There's also ways to bring things that are easier for people to get at than others. It's actually the sort of driving force to my creating big media, which is my background, incidentally. I grew up, my dad worked for Time Incorporated. My first job was at HBO. I've put on Academy Award winning campaigns. I come from big media. So when I say I am creating big media, I'm not doing it to do big stuff. I'm doing it to bring something in a form that can make it accessible to a whole lot of people who can choose it rather than feel then they're being saddled with it. And that means taking it out in a certain way that is inviting, involving, celebratory, and exciting for people. So I don't really see that there's some people that are fixed or that, you know, we need to do something like protect ourselves from them. The thing that is at the core of all of that is this misperception of what thought is and the thought world and our over-reliance on the basics of thinking, which really are best spent like, you know, door, knob, door, open, remember what's on my grocery list. And we use it for far too much. We can grow tremendously, transform, as you're saying, when we learn to come from our inner guidance, which is much more to do with our emotional guidance system. That's our relationship with the natural world, how we are moved from within based on our feeling nature of connection.
Before we wrap up, tell us about the Art for Living, Art of Living Coalition.
The Coalition. Well, I founded the Coalition in 1996 out of a recognition. We had men come to the women's circle that I'd produced for 6 years. We were at this beautiful waterfall in Malibu on my friend's land. And I looked around at the guys and the women that were there, and each one was the center of an amazing community, from men's groups, women's groups, environmental, film cooperative, you name it. And I was like, wow, look how magnificent we all are and what we're all up to. And yet it was kind of a recognition at the same time that we were sort of running in parallel. And what would it be like if we actually came together at the next level? And I had a very dear friend named Francois Mazur, who was, we feel like we maybe were in the French Revolution together or something. And now we were learning how to give a revolution that didn't go up against anything, the art of living.
Yeah.
And so we would have these wonderful coffee conversations about what we could offer and what could happen if we all came together. And it became very evident that the form was a coalition, because what is a coalition? It's for with coming together. And so I founded the Art of Living Coalition in 1996, and we started to co-create these large ritual events called the Great Sun Circles. And it's been kept going. I have a core group that meets every week, a couple times a week. From, you spoke about Ireland, Tasmania, other parts of the United States, Colorado, you know, so we're well in place all around the world. And now we're going to be coalescing and convening and inviting more people in to co-create with us and create what we each are here individually to bring, not with us ordaining what it is, but with us providing the principles and the dynamics to empower people to make their own good choices and create wherever they are. So that's the purpose of the Art of Living Coalition. And artofliving.com, I felt from 1995 when I got the URL that I was blessed to be among all people in the world to have the URL, and I feel that it can be taken to a much greater level, and again, when we come together. So I want to demonstrate these principles, as we have been all along, to bring the goodness of what I've been shown, what we as a community have learned along the way, to bring people together all around the world at the next level. Yes, it was good in the last year to stand up. It was good to, you know, strengthen our voices, but where do we go from here? And I feel like my work of the last 30 years has been all to prepare me and prepare us to be able to bring these deeper insights, this more subtle understanding through big media and events. Why? To provide consistency and a context that allows us to see all the good stuff in relationship.
Frankie Lee Slater is my guest, and we're talking about the Art of Living. Artofliving.com is the website. We encourage you to go there as well and find out more about what she is doing and get involved in coming full circle to bring the art of living to.
And Richard, can we and Circles Uniting Global on Facebook, join and like the page. It's just called Circles Uniting Global, facebook.com/CirclesUniting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We encourage you to go there as well. I want to ask you three final questions before we wrap up. But first, I want to thank you so much for giving us this time. And we'd love to have you in studio while you're on the Central Coast. Maybe we can get you into studio here and we can do something as well, because there is still so much more we can talk about. I wanted to dive into the aspect of the diverse cultures that are out there and how we either A, maintain those as different groups of people on the planet, the Irish and the Mexican and the Yugoslavian and the Tasmanian and so forth, but at the same time also embrace not only the other cultures, but also acknowledge our global culture. That's another subject that we'll get into at another time. But in terms of this whole aspect of the circles and the weaving of these threads together to learn who we truly are. And so, again, I look forward to doing that. And also a reminder to our listeners that if you're listening to the radio broadcast, you better go to the podcast, because there's more. I said it at the beginning of the program, and I'm going to say it now. Go to the podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, or go to the homepage of richarddugan.com or the radio show's page to find out more. Three final questions for you. They are in order. First question, I feel a little bit like Alex Trebek. Who is Frankie Lee Slater?
Myself. I feel like I am myself. Now, it goes to what you asked earlier, which is, by being myself, I get to be access for people everywhere. And I would say that the spirit of being Frankie Lee Slater, my parents nailed pretty well in my name, which actually translates as free poet. So I like that very much. Mm-hmm. And I've adopted Frankie Lee, freedom, honesty, and Lee poet or meadow. So I live my name, and I love to unify people. I only see people's higher self. I love to grow it and in them, show them how to grow it in themselves and create outlets for people to bring their gifts together. This is what I'm here for.
You may have answered these questions in the interview, but I ask them directly. The second question is, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Uh, a kind of freedom for people to express from their deeper nature. I have beautiful gifts right now, as I've described. They're quite large by a lot of people's standards. And the neat thing about that is that I absolutely must live the principles that I know to be true, which is I can only be who I am, bring my gifts, and then rely on what other people have to bring to the table. So this is a true exercise in living the principles and inviting people to come together and co-create, because that's how it'll happen. There are avenues for people to co-create, and I am ready to see it rip. I'm ready for a major breakthrough, and I feel that this phase shift that's so outpictured in how I've gone about things is actually up for all of humanity. And however I can support people in making it in a good way, I'm here for that.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
I may be from the future a little bit, Richard. You know, I see the greater world that includes. From the moment I was a little child, I have always seen connection. And so I feel my purpose is to really hold true to this greater understanding of what's possible for human beings and to bring that. And I came up with a definition some years ago of sorrow. And it was a realization that we all deep down know that we're here for something. And in the world that we've lived in, the box world, if you will, you know, we haven't really been a fit. And so sorrow has been this, not that we don't have something to bring or that we don't matter, but actually deep down that we know that we absolutely have something to bring and that we do matter. And yet we haven't known how to bring it. So my purpose is to provide the avenues for people to have a place true to who we are in our nature that will allow everyone to bring their gifts and to fulfill on their soul's journey, mine included.
Well, Frankie Lee, I want to again thank you so much for joining us on the program and sharing your story and the work that you're doing. And we encourage our listeners to go to your website, artofliving.com, as well as the Facebook page. And that was Circles. Give me the
Circles Uniting.
Circles Uniting.
Plural. And it's uniting because it's a verb. It's an action. We're uniting. We're not united, a thing. We're uniting.
We're in,
an action.
In process.
Yes.
Beautiful thing.
Again, yeah, and you said my email. You said livingart@artofliving.com. So that's people can certainly reach out to me if they want to host me. If I'll come move in with you, perhaps. Startling idea.
If you're looking for a house guest, folks, Frankie Lee's available.
And to create.
Absolutely.
To really be a base to co-create. And if that's anywhere across oceans, I'm up for that as well. It's time to bring Circles Uniting global.
That's exciting. Well, I thank you folks for listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.